Who knew this would happen? A magic potion could save my heart. Who knew that these feelings had a name? I'm worthy of change, same as you are. Mirror, mirror, don't you judge me, don't you dare. Who knew I was capable of loving? Who was there staring back? I said staring back.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the Transitional Wisdom Podcast, where Nash and I discuss all things trans and queer-related from a variety of different perspectives. Today we are going to be discussing...
peeing.
Peeing!
Everybody's favorite topic.
Totally. It's my favorite topic, for sure.
Yeah, Nash, you're going to share with us kind of pre-fallow and then also post.
Yeah, so it's something... it's going to sound... dumb, but it's something I didn't really think about as far as the peeing itself. So like the things like a stream or, you know, how fast it comes out, like none of that ever crossed my mind until after phalloplasty. And I didn't, there's a lot that I just didn't understand because I didn't realize how important it was to just kind of like understand your own body. So I've learned over the course of my, you know, almost 2 years post fallow, what I wish I knew before that could have kind of helped me now. So I thought it would be really good for us to kind of just talk about our experiences with peeing, you know, you just in general, and then me, you know, pre and post fallow, since it's changed. So something that sticks out to me, pre phalloplasty is when I was probably about 22 or 23. So this is before I identified as, you know, a trans man, or before I started transitioning, before it was really on my radar, anything like that. I was just existing as, you know, like a cis female lesbian. But the girl I was dating at the time reminded me of this after phalloplasty. So when I was dating her around 22, 23, she used to have to go to the bathroom with me and hold my hand or sit there and talk to me. Like the way she tells it, I don't really remember a lot of this, and I don't remember a lot of things in general from before I transitioned, so it's not like this specifically, but you know, she reminded me that like her experience was that she would have to sit there and she would have to kind of comfort me through being able to go to the bathroom. And this wasn't a public bathroom issue. This was, she said, like literally at my house, she used to sit there with me in my own bathroom.
Wow, that's wild that you don't remember that.
You know, I remember little bits of it. Like I remember the bathroom. I know the bathroom she's talking about. There was, the sink had a countertop, and I do remember she used to either sit on top of the countertop and talk to me face to face, or she would sit on, there was a bathtub that was kind of like in the floor, if that makes sense. It was
okay.
This was at my grandmother's house. So my grandmother's house is, you know, older. So they had this jacuzzi style bathtub, but it was in the, it was like, imagine an in-ground pool, but this was an in-ground bathtub. So
that's wild.
so weird. But so she used to sit on like the ledge of that, which would be perpendicular to the toilet bowl, and kind of like lean her hand out and hold my hand. And so I remember her sitting there. I can envision her sitting there, and I have those memories, but I don't remember it being such a production of me having to pee and everything. So, you know, I really struggled with going to the bathroom. I really struggled with, I guess, obviously feeling comfortable or safe in my body. I do know that before transition, peeing in public was definitely hard for me. I hated using public restrooms, and there was a period of time, a few years, where I worked at New York Sports Club, which is a gym. They're like along the, I think it's mostly on the East Coast, but I I worked there for a few years, and when I worked there, I had to use the women's locker room to change or to go to the bathroom or, you know, whatever it was. We didn't have anything that was neutral or even a single stall. And even though I had a name tag on and stuff, I would always have women who were like, "What are you doing in here?" And I know at that time going to the bathroom was incredibly difficult for me. I do remember texting. I was dating the same girl that I just shared about. I was dating her when I worked there too, and I remember often texting her and saying like, I don't know what to do. I'm so uncomfortable like going to the bathroom here, whatever. So it was. There's definitely like this baseline of my anxiety in the bathroom, but I never thought it was a problem. I never realized it was a problem. I just kind of assumed everyone was like that, or I just assumed it was like some people have this feeling and some don't.
Do you think like having those experiences, like obviously your anxiety was twofold. It was your uncomfortableness with your body and then also how other people made you feel unwelcomed.
Yes.
But at that time, maybe it was easier to just say, like, were you processing the things with your body at that time, or was it more just like other people made you feel uncomfortable there and you're just like...
Yeah, the second one. I was more harmed by other people's perceptions and feelings about me versus my own internal feelings about my own body or myself. I don't think I ever found room. Like, I think when it comes to my transition and my gender understanding, I never had room for myself to actually explore it until I did explore it. There was always something happening in my life or in my family's life or whatever that was so detrimental or so like a crisis. My sister had really bad asthma growing up, and she was in and out of the hospitals constantly. Like, my parents were, you know, one parent would be home with me and the other two siblings, and one parent would be flying her to someplace for like severe medical treatment. You know, there was just, and then my brother had cancer. There was always something really, really traumatic going on in that way. Mm-hmm. So I think that all of that, and I'm the oldest, so like I was kind of always the other parent in my family mm-hmm. dynamic. So I never had space to really explore these things for myself or like you just asked me, even begin to process, well, what does this mean that I can't go to the bathroom in public or I can't go to the bathroom, period. So it was just impossible to even get to the point of understanding that. But when I did start transitioning, that was when I started to pay more attention to things like this and to actually start to process and to figure out what's going on, what am I feeling, you know. And then in doing that, it raised my awareness of things like using the bathroom and everything. So I can remember exactly the first time it was brought to my attention, and it was by somebody else. It was actually by my partner's mom, who, when we lived in Seattle, so we moved to Seattle so I could transition and to be closer to her family for her. And when we did that, her parents lived very close to us. So we would go there, you know, once, twice a week for either like lunch or dinner or something like that. And it was within the first few weeks of living there. So in the first few weeks of my medical transition. And at that point, I had gone to the bathroom, and I remember Blair either texted me or Blair told me later or something. But like, there was a conversation while I was in the bathroom of like, is he okay? Like, he goes to the bathroom a lot, or like he spends a lot of time there or something like that. And I remember feeling really confused because I was like, I do? Like, I didn't understand. And and then when I was thinking about it more, I started to realize like I used to go to the bathroom. I would have like a full bladder. Like, I would feel like I was going to pee my pants if I didn't go. I would go pee. I would go sit on the toilet, and see, I kid you not, it would take me anywhere from like 45 seconds to like several minutes to get a stream started, like just to have the pee actually coming out of my body.
Wow.
And it wasn't a conscious thing. It's not like I wasn't sitting there like, wow, I'm so uncomfortable. I don't feel safe in this bathroom. I don't feel safe peeing. You know, this happened at my own house. This happened at Blair's parents' house, who I feel incredibly comfortable with. And they've, you know, I feel... like I felt safe mm-hmm. in that way. There's no reason for that. But it happened everywhere. So I never thought it was something that was wrong or off because it happened everywhere. So once that was kind of brought to my attention, I started to pay like a little more attention. So I'd go, I'd go to the bathroom full bladder. When I did finally pee, I would like, you know, think I was done peeing. I would finish up, pull my pants up, leave the bathroom. And within 10 or 15 minutes, I had to pee again. And now looking back, I'm understanding that I think my bladder was so, like, my body obviously was so scared or whatever, but my bladder was basically like retaining pee. And so I was having to go again very quickly, most likely because I was just so anxious that my body couldn't relax enough to get it all out. So that was kind of interesting to, I think, understand for myself, because like I said, it was just not something I really thought was a problem.
You were kind of used to it in a sense, like that's just how you had been living for so long.
Yeah, it's kind of how I felt, how I feel when people ask me about dysphoria for myself. Like I never would say to you I had dysphoria my whole life, because to me my dysphoria was just my normal state of being. And only now, when I don't suffer from that every single day, every single moment, am I able to acknowledge, like, no, I had a lot of dysphoria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So with all of that, because of all this information, I think, like, so I simultaneously had a lot of information about my peeing habits, but I also really didn't. But that information kind of really helped me post-fallow, because when I was recovering from phalloplasty, you know, first you have a catheter in. So catheter, you know, you're peeing through a bag, you're peeing through a tube. Like, it's totally different than it is to just pee on your own, obviously. And there's no scheduling of like, oh, I have to go pee now. You know, you're just emptying to a bag typically. So for a couple months, I was just emptying into this bag. I had no sense of what peeing was supposed to be. How often does somebody pee? I also had no frame of reference because my partner, Blair, like, pees once a day. Like, she doesn't drink enough water. Well, now she does, but at the time, she didn't drink enough, she never drank enough water. So she was literally peeing, like, you know, 1-2 times a day. So I had no point of reference of, like, what normal bathroom visits should be. So post-fallow, one of the things that was hardest for me was when I was trying to get back to normal with peeing, despite the strictures and the complications that were physically not allowing me to pee. The hardest part for me was like not having something to compare it to. I didn't have a healthy urine experience, or that's a weird thing to say. I didn't have a healthy peeing experience to compare it to from pre-fallow. So to take, you know, when your frame of reference is all like, let's just say unhealthy peeing experiences, because it's just easy to classify it that way. When you only have like unhealthy peeing experiences to look at, it's really difficult to then try and figure out what is healthy when there's been this big change.
Because you don't have an example for it.
There's no
framework. So you don't have a baseline.
Yeah, there's no framework. So I found that to be incredibly difficult. And so what I started to do was I kept a journal, and I had this little mini notebook that I would keep next to the toilet with a pen. And then I also had one on my phone, so I had it digitally, just because I'm super OCD and I need to have multiple copies. But what I would do is I would write down the time, like when I would go to the bathroom, I'd write down what time it was when I was peeing. And then because of my complications that I was facing, I had a, I don't know what the name of it is for, but it's like a medical, it's like a cup. I don't know. Think of like,
you had a pee jar. It's okay.
Yeah, think of like a mixing container, like, or what you would use when you're baking, where you would like measure the flour and then measure, you know,
a measuring cup.
Oh my god, thank you. I had basically like a medical grade measuring cup for peeing into. So, what I did was, this is so extra, but I literally cannot emphasize enough how much it affected my like ability to communicate with my surgeon in a really good way and allow him to help me in a timely fashion, because I was keeping such good notes. So what I did was, on the back of my toilet, I had a tripod set up, and I had it set up in the perfect angle. It was there 24/7. And what I would do is, if I had to go pee, I'd put my phone on the tripod, set it to video, and grab my medical grade measuring cup, and I would videotape myself peeing into the measuring cup. And then after I finished, I would go to my notebook and I would write down what time it was. I would write down how many milliliters of urine came out. And then I would rewatch the video and figure out how long it took me to empty. So how long it took me to actually do that pee. What this did was allow me to see my urine output versus how long it's taking me to get that much out. And that's a ratio that I can't speak for all surgeons. In my experience, Dr. Chen is the only bottom surgeon that has so far kind of done this based on people I've spoken to. And I've been telling a lot of people to do this for themselves because nobody's really shared about this before that I've seen. So Dr. Chen, one of the things to kind of figure out, okay, are you having a stricture? Are you having some sort of crazy swelling and inflammation internally? What's the issue or anything? The way he kind of starts to figure that out without surgical intervention or anything is by looking at the output, the urine output versus how long it's taking. So he looks...
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very... And right.
It kind of seems like common sense when you think about it.
Exactly.
If you have a stricture, it's going to be restricting your flow
right. And
making it harder for you to void.
Right. But even somebody who had four strictures, I will tell you, every single time, I didn't understand how important it was.
Did it feel different every single time? Or by the fourth one, you're like, oh, this is...
So because mine were so back-to-back, I think the pain was... I just had a constant state of pain. So...
Yeah.
I would feel relief in between for short periods of time. So I guess to answer your question, yes and no.
Okay.
It's hard to say because it was on and off, but by me keeping track of all this stuff, not only was it a way for me to self-soothe if nothing was really mm-hmm. going on, but it was mm-hmm. also a way for me to track things. And when I was seeing, just some broad guidelines that Dr. Chen has. If it's taking you over a minute to pee, that could be a sign of an issue, especially if it's – so, he looks for about 150 to 200 milliliters for, 20 to 30 seconds. And that's very, loose. But if you're getting over a minute of peeing – that's when he starts to be like, okay, there might be something going on. We should think about this. We should look into this. So I kind of took all the information he was giving me and I developed this recovery tracking plan for myself. So, but because of that, I was able to, I was able to then see okay, so yesterday I was able to empty 200 milliliters in, let's just say 30 seconds. And I was doing that consistently for a week. And then all of a sudden, I'm going 200 milliliters is taking me 60 seconds. And then, oh my God, it's taking me 70 seconds. And as you see that the time number getting bigger, but the output not changing or the output mm-hmm. getting less, that's usually a sign that something is wrong. And it tends to be a stricture in from what I've learned. So because of my OCD tedious tracking, that's why Dr. Chen was able to address things so quickly with me. Because I was getting him this information as it was happening, and we were monitoring kind of day to day what was going on. And if that weren't the case, I feel pretty confident saying that what took a year and 8 months, 9 months for me to heal from would have taken 2, 3, 4 years, 5 years, maybe, who knows? It would not have been a year and 8 months is a long time, but it would not have been that short.
If you wouldn't have been as diligent and as...
Yeah, if I wasn't as on top of it. And mm-hmm. and so that is something that really, really, I just can't say helped me enough. And the other thing I really learned from doing that was, so I know you know, but anybody else that doesn't know, I had C. diff, which is an infection. I had that from about, a month or two after my stage one phalloplasty, and then for the next year and a half. Undiagnosed. So while I was having the C. diff, the inflammation internally was also adding to me being unable to have a lot of urine output. Everything was so swollen and inflamed that I was inevitably having to pee more often. So it's just important to realize that even if you're not having a stricture issue,
could be something else going on as well.
Right. Like, just kind of really being on top of it allowed me. And like I said, even being this on top of it, you know, my C. diff wasn't finally diagnosed for a year and a half. Like, so mm-hmm. as, you know, like, so even being super on top of it, like, things still happen. So it's, to me, it was better to do everything I could possibly do for myself to be in control of the situation and to try to, like, minimize a bigger outcome or a worse outcome or something. So mm-hmm. tracking it and just, oh, and in my tracking, I also would, I would write notes like, let me pull this up because they were
funny. Please do.
They were
Please
funny. Do. They were funny. there, yeah, it was, so like here, for example, like I would write 4:18 p.m., 250 milliliters in about 36 seconds. Peed for 30 seconds, then I stopped for 3 minutes, and then a tiny bit of pee. So these are my notes in my phone, but looking back, I'm reading this and I'm like, okay, that's a pretty sure sign of a stricture or some sort of inflammation or something that's restricting peeing. And then, like, I have also in here, like, okay, you know, on August 9th at 10:02, I peed 145 milliliters in 20 seconds. I also had 3 bowel movements that day. The point of sharing the point of tracking the bowel movements was, like, it was usually the more bowel movements I had per day also meant I had a lot more peeing because the inflammation internally was creating me feeling like I had to pee all the time because it was mm-hmm. so sensitive. And also I should say for the C. diff, the biggest symptoms of C. diff are diarrhea, like multiple bouts of diarrhea throughout the day. So I was going like 12 to 15 times at my absolute worst. God. I basically was the toilet.
You didn't leave.
I didn't. No, I really didn't. I mean, I really didn't leave. There was periods of time where I couldn't leave. I couldn't leave the house because I couldn't be within. Mm-hmm. I had to be within close proximity of a toilet. So, okay. And then here, I wanted to share this one. So, like on this one, I wrote, I have bladder pain on my left side. It's very sore and it feels irritated. It feels like I have to pee all the time, even though I don't have to pee and nothing is coming out. Mm. So, like, I kept very diligent notes of all those little details because that can help the surgeon to figure out, okay, is this inflammation? Is it a stricture? Is it the person's nervous where he's peeing? You know, that was something that I remember Dr. Chen and I heard another surgeon talking at a conference had talked about was that a lot of guys, even post-fallow, struggle to feel – like they'd still feel anxious for a while because it's still like just because your body changed doesn't mean your brain caught up right away. Mm-hmm. So, which is something I experienced. But so there would be guys who they would be like, why am I not able to pee in public still? Whatever. So even though I would have like a full bladder and feel like I was going to pee my pants, if I wasn't able to pee in public, but then I could come home and pee with no problem. That's important to differentiate because yeah. that's not a medical issue. That's just an issue with overcoming this trauma or this challenge or whatever. That's why I kept like such, you know, specific notes on even what my body was feeling or how it felt to pee. So like on this one, I wrote, you know, pee is flowing out easily. no issue with pee coming out. Like, and it sounds so silly, but that's important to know because like there's a difference between like when I have people like reach out and ask me after their surgeries, like they'll be like, I'm having trouble peeing. It feels like this or whatever. And the first question I always ask is like, do you feel like you're pushing to get the pee out? Or does it feel like it's just coming out, but it hurts? Because that's a huge difference. And the difference is like when you're pushing, that's usually the sign of a problem. Like if you have to push to pee, mm-hmm. there's something wrong because you're pushing through something. What are you pushing through? But if you're just feeling pain, but the pee is coming out, no problem, and you're not retaining urine or whatever, that can be something else that's not as, you know, severe or whatever. So this really, really helped me. And people I've shared it with have said that like, since I kind of shared that and they were able to start doing that, it helped them give more information to their surgeons too. And that is so awesome because like, that's the whole point is like, we as the trans people have to kind of develop these ways to make things more successful for ourselves, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, because it's definitely not a perfected, you know, science yet. It's still definitely, I feel like the more that both sides can contribute.
Absolutely.
Is definitely the best.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something I've expressed to Dr. Chen often, is that, you know, he's an incredible surgeon. He's an incredible person. He's so compassionate and caring towards all of his patients and to all of us in the community. But he can be all of that, and he can still be a terrible, I'm not saying he's a terrible surgeon, but I'm saying he can be all the things I described, and he can also be a very bad surgeon because we, as the client, as the patients, are not giving him the information he needs to do better or to work on things or whatever. So, you know, there are people I know who will have surgery with Dr. Chen, and then they'll end up having a stricture, and because they traveled from long distance to come to Dr. Chen to begin with, they'll seek out a local urologist to fix the stricture, and then they won't necessarily tell Dr. Chen that they had a stricture and that this is what they have, whatever. What that does then is, Dr. Chen's statistics, when you ask him how many strictures have you had, his statistics can only be reflective of what we're reporting back. So if they're at, you know, like a 45 or 50, whatever it is, a 40 or 50% complication rate to begin with, what else, how much higher can it be because of the people that we're not hearing from? Mm-hmm. And the same thing with, you know, like something Dr. Chen has told me from the very beginning is after, like, the typical thing is 1 year after surgery, you're considered like completely healed and out of the woods of issues that you would have in that first year. Like, so the cutoff is kind of like a year. That's the typical one. So I had asked him, you know, what is the longest period of time post stage one that somebody has come back to you and said, I have a stricture? And he was like, I think it's like around 9 months is what he told me at the time. So like, what that means is 9 months after this individual had their stage one, they then came back and said to Dr. Chen, I think I have a stricture, and they ended up having a stricture and needing surgery. Mm-hmm. So, but because they hadn't been in touch with him throughout that 9 months, Dr. Chen is unable to say, maybe that stricture developed at 3 or 4 months.
At 3 months, and they just dealt with it for that long.
They just decided that they wanted to just put up with it and maybe hoped it would get better, as we all do. I certainly hoped it, but then reported it at 9 months. Or, you know, the person who at three, like, this is just a hypothetical, but what if somebody at 3 years is coming back and saying, I have a stricture? And so then Dr. Chen's like, wow, I guess people can develop strictures up to 3 years post-op. But in reality, that individual was just decided that he wanted to just live with it for 3 years, and then maybe at that point he got sick of it. So there, I think that as much as it's our surgeon's responsibility to be like trained and knowledgeable and, you know, have experience and all those things, it's also our responsibility to give him the information that is going to allow him to do better in the future or do better for the next mm-hmm. person. And so that's why I think like, us doing these things, it's important to share it with the doctor, with the other community members, because no one is going to do better if we're not starting with us. Like, we have to start to help that, you know. Like, unfortunately, Dr. Chen is not a trans man, and, you know, he can't like understand certain things that we, as the trans men or non-binary people that are trans masculine, like, we understand it differently. So for example, after surgery, when I was able to finally pee on my own and not have a catheter or anything, I would literally go to the bathroom and I would drop my pants to the floor and I would pee and then I would pull my pants back up. And I would do this whether it was a public restroom or at home. And I remember I would often think like, how do men go to the urinals? Like, they're not taking their pants down. So how are they keeping them up? I don't get this. Like, how are they peeing through their pants? And it's not something that Dr. Chen ever mentioned. It's not something any other trans guy I had talked to or had seen write about their experience ever mentioned. And so I finally, like, I remember one day called Dr. Chen and I was like, this is the weirdest thing I've called you for, but can you please tell me how you pee in public, like at the urinal or whatever? And he was like, what do you mean? Like, and he was like very sweetly like, what do you mean? You just go. And I was like, no, but like, what do I do with my pants? And he was like, I've never really thought about it. And he had to explain to me, like, what you do with your pants in order to pee at the urinal, or just in order to pee in general without pulling them down to the floor. And that was really interesting because he said himself, like, he's like, I've been doing this my whole life. I take it for granted. I don't think about it. He's like, it's no different than how, you know, we just put a shirt on or we just put a hat on. Like, you just do it. Like, that's it. And you don't think about it. So same thing here. Like, he wasn't thinking about it. And but me, I'm like not stopping thinking about it because I'm like, how the fuck am I going to pee? Whatever. So for anybody who doesn't know how to do this, I'm going to share because I got.
Please share.
Dr. Chen definitely explained it to me, but I am very visual and I need somebody who can really walk me through it. So actually my brother-in-law really taught me how to do this. He like talked it through with me over the phone. So sweet. So what you do is you pull the waistband of your boxer briefs or your boxers or whatever you're wearing, your underwear, pull the waistband like right below your, I'm going to use the biological terms. So you pull it below like your penis and the scrotum. And I kind of hold it there with my thumb inside the waistband. So my thumb is kind of like against my, like my pubic bone area. And then my fingers are kind of like dangling out and I kind of hold my waistband in place that way with one hand. And then I use the other hand to hold my actual penis and pee. And then it's literally as easy as pulling your waistband away from your body, like pulling it away like that and letting your junk drop back in the underwear and then kind of just like softly letting go. It's like the simplest thing. Like now that I know how to do it, I'm like, this is so fucking easy. But like, there's no way I could have figured that out on my own. I didn't figure it out on my own. it's like
that's awesome though.
Yeah,
that you have those resources to be able to go to.
Yeah, and it's great to have like allies and people that care about us who are willing to do that. And it's something I'm very grateful for with Dr. Chen too, that he was so willing to try to teach me and to try to explain those things. And but like, you know, again, like, also, this episode has more so, I feel like, turned into, like, how to be a better patient to your surgeon. but it's okay. Going along with that, you know, that's something now that Dr. Chen told me he's going to try to, like, in the future, remember to share with patients or to ask, you know, kind of find a way to be, like, do you need help? Like, do you need to know how to do this or whatever? So that's really cool because it's not something he would have known to do. And it's the same with everything else. So there was also, oh, so like for sex, like, you know, I don't have an internal implant. So there's a few ways like to have sex then with like your, that new body part. So the ways are like, you know, well, I'm sorry, I should be more specific. There's a few ways to penetrate with that body part without an implant. And usually it's using an external device. So anything from like a hollow dildo or strap on to there's a device made for cis men who have erectile dysfunction. It's an external device and that's what I have and use, and that's another option. So I had asked Dr. Chen, you know, when can I use this device? And he was like, it's not, you know, once you're healed or whatever, you know. First, this was, you know, almost 2 years ago. First, he had said, I believe he had said, like, you know, wait like 3 months, which is basically when you can, when you're cleared to masturbate, when you're cleared to do most things. So he said, you know, wait till like 3 months. And since then, almost like 2 years ago, having that conversation, now he has learned more from us, from people giving feedback from all these situations, that he now, I believe, tells everybody to wait like 6 months to use the device.
Okay.
Like 3 to 6 months or something like that. So it's important that we share these things because, again, like, he wouldn't have learned that that was something that should be, like, done with more care.
More caution.
Right. Yeah. Like, he didn't know about the device. He had never, you know, I literally was just kind of like, I heard about this device. It's an external device. It goes on your penis. Can I use it? And he was like, I don't see why not. Like, if it's not hurting you or if it's not cutting off blood flow, like, I don't see why not. And I was like, okay. And then in learning more and sharing more and all this stuff, then, you know, he came back and had said, like, well, I think it can pull on the urethra, which can create, like, blood flow issues and blah, blah, blah. So now there's, you know, he has more warnings now that he's giving out to people because of that. Mm-hmm. And this is why it's important to share this information and to give feedback on what's going on. The same as, you know, Dr. Chen, when I was diagnosed with my pulmonary embolisms, Dr. Chen said I was his first patient that had happened to. That might not be true. It just might be his first patient that he was there,
heard
like,
about,
was aware of it. Yeah, because I told him I was in San Francisco, I was in his hospital, like, I kept him in the loop. Other people may have had the same problem and he just doesn't know about it because it was never told to him. And the same thing with the C. diff. Like, he said that he hadn't had a patient who got C. diff, and the C. diff was basically like, or I also punctured a hole through my urethra when I was using a self catheter. I literally ripped a hole through my urethra. And he said that, and then it created a staph infection internally. He said that had never happened to anybody he had as a patient. And again, I don't know that that's true. I just think it never happened to somebody that maybe told him.
Mm-hmm.
I totally believe him that he didn't have a patient that did that, but I don't think I'm the only one. Like, so, you know, like, whatever. We can also change this episode. This is like, we're going
like to medically advocate for yourself or something.
This is like, this is going in all kinds of directions.
I like it.
Cause I think for me, the most important thing when it comes to like the peeing is the fact that if I was more in touch with that stuff pre-fallow, I maybe would have started doing things differently sooner. Like, I didn't start keeping a journal until almost a year after my complication, you know, after my first surgery. It was like 9 months or something. So had I done that sooner, maybe we would have caught the C. diff. Maybe we would have caught this or whatever, you know. And not for nothing, it also is a really, really fucking cool reminder of, like, how much I overcame and, like, how much I've been able to get back to normal or whatever you want to call it. Like, what?
Dude, you've been through a lot. Because like, there's no way around that. Like, I mean, even when you were just saying, like, you know, Dr. Chen said I was the first of this and the first of this. Like, those weren't good firsts.
No. No.
So yeah, you've been through shit, man.
And I wonder sometimes, like, you know, I do feel like I was really on top of it, but at the same time, I was not on top of a lot of it for the first, you know, 6, 8, 7, 8 months. And I do wonder how much what would be differently. I won't say how much. I want to say what would be different had I been more on top of it in the beginning. But, you know, here we are, and that's okay. This experience happened for a reason. But yeah, I think it's just super important to really, like, try to learn about ourselves as much as we want. The other thing is – this is off of whatever. The other thing is, like, you know, I didn't even understand what my urethra was. I thought my urethra was the same hole as where you used to put things inside of. Like, that's how much out of touch I was with my, like,
anatomy and everything else.
Yeah. I don't want to say, like, the V word, because I hate it. But I was so out of touch with that stuff, and it caused so many issues because I couldn't even understand my own body. So how could I understand what a surgeon is telling me?
Yeah.
I don't even know. You know, when they're telling me, oh, you know, we're going to lengthen your urethra, I'm like, I don't fucking understand what that means. But, like, okay, sounds good. As long as I can pee, sounds great. Like,
right.
So, you know, I feel like I went off topic, but I also didn't.
You didn't. It's just a very wide ranging.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of Transitional Wisdom. If you feel you'd like to share your story or if there's a topic you would like us to cover, please email us at nash@transitionalwisdom.org or visit our website, transitionalwisdom.org. And please don't forget to like, share, rate, whatever. It really helps us reach a wider audience of people who may find this helpful. And hey, thanks.
Who knew this would happen? A magic potion could save my heart. Who knew that these feelings had a name? I'm worthy of change, same as you are. Mirror, mirror, don't you judge me.